Welcome to the Fatigue Super Conference. And my guest for this conversation is Nicolas Pineau. And this is going to be, I think, a really interesting conversation. I think it's one of those areas that people will have heard different opinions and perspectives around. I think there's some misinformation and confusion on different perspectives of this argument. When we're looking at electromagnetic fields and kind of, I guess, pollution and toxicity from those. And Nicolas, I'll give his background in a moment, but he's got a very good book, The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs, which got me sucked in straight away. So that's a good resource that we'll mention a few times. But just to give Nicolas's background, Nicolas Pineau is an investigative health journalist, educator, and advocate for safe technologies. In 2017, he authored The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs, an unconventional book endorsed by top health authorities such as Dr. Mercola, and which tackles the serious topic of electromagnetic pollution with humor and common sense. He since launched the Electrosmog RX online course with the goal of educating 100,000 health professionals how to prevent, diagnose, and treat EMF-related illness. Nicolas, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So I'm curious, before we get into a bit more about what EMFs are and some of the background and research around this, what got you interested in this topic?
It was really one thing led to another. In 2015, I barely knew about the topic, to be quite honest with you. I heard about dangers of cell phones. I was kind of a little bit prudent when using my cell phone, kind of trying to hold it not next to my ear, and I don't know, in my mind it was, oh, it's radiation. I've heard about brain cancer and disinformation, but I was really someone digging into food research and the food industry at that point as an investigative health journalist. So I really didn't know better myself, and I started reading one book after another. One of them is a book by Deborah Davis called Disconnect, and Deborah Davis is a PhD scientist that has been working for the U.S. government for years on different issues of environmental toxicity, such as mercury, if I recall correctly. And she herself was digging into the topic and found it to be extremely concerning. So her background, and also reading multiple books from people with very credible backgrounds, such as the late Martin Blank, who was a physicist and a biologist, who was a teacher at a prestigious university, I thought, well, oh wow, these people actually are credible, and they talk about a topic that seems to be credible itself. And one thing led to another, and I found the topic to be very important to talk about, and so much that I decided to make it almost my lifelong mission, I guess, or at least for the next few decades. I have a lot of work ahead of me, but I found it to be very daunting, very overwhelming, and very complicated to understand, because it took me about 2 years until I finally got my head around, okay, what these EMF things are and what we can do about it, and kind of make the topic understandable enough so that I can talk about it. So I thought, okay, well, I probably need to write a simpler book compared to everything that's out there. And that was really the epiphany moment that I had in 2017. And the rest is history. Since then, I've been solely focused on that topic.
Fantastic. And maybe I think this is a good point to go into a bit more about, when we talk about EMFs, what are we talking about? And in the first chapter, you have a really good kind of continuum, really, which shows the different sorts of electromagnetic fields. But yeah, maybe just give people a bit of context of, when we talk about this, what kinds of things we're referring to.
Sure. So EMFs relates to or refers to electromagnetic fields. It's not the best scientific term to use, but it's one that people can understand, because in the end, EMFs are everywhere and have always been everywhere. So the sun emits electromagnetic fields, UV radiation, infrared radiation when you feel the heat, and also color. So visible light is also an EMF. So it gets a little bit tricky, but the type of EMFs that I'm interested into my when it comes to my research is Wi-Fi, cell phones, Bluetooth, and even household electricity, or all the sources of, let's say, man-made EMFs that have never been around before the electrification of our society, which is fairly recent in human history. And then very recently, the wireless signals that we've rolled out to everything and everyone. And we can say the last 20 years, but really it's the last 10 that have been extremely key with the advent of the smartphone. So really the EMFs is the communication signals that headphones use, such as your Bluetooth headphone that I see you're using. Well, yeah. If I'm using my cell phone, the same thing. It's communicating with a tower. The Wi-Fi signals that is covering your home, and you can pick it up on your devices. It's also a type of EMF. So these are new signals that have never been seen before in nature. And my research and my question and why I'm on this fatigue super conference is the effect. What is the effect that these signals, these new EMFs, have on your energy levels and on your fatigue levels?
So it's also one of the things that helped land this topic for me, and I should say this is something that I feel like I have a basic level of understanding, to the point that I've made some minor changes in my life. But as I said to you before we started recording, it's one of those ones that I recognize that there's further that I could go. So for example, you notice I'm wearing my AirPods. I really like these for recording because there's no cables as I try and move around. It suddenly pulls them out of my ear. But I have another, for example, set of headphones that I tend to use for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I don't use my mobile phone to my ear. I tend to use it on speakerphone. So there's kind of these minor kind of pieces, but as I say, I recognize that there's more that's possible. And one of the things that landed this for me was when I was reading your book, looking at this kind of continuum of realizing that there's no debate that things like, for example, X-ray machines can be harmful. Like that's not a debate in society. That's why people that operate those machines will be behind a protective kind of screen, that it's not good to be X-rayed too frequently. So in a sense, the question is not around whether these different kinds of electromagnetic fields have an impact. Really, the question is, at what level is that impact enough that it is potentially dangerous to the human body? And I guess that's where this starts to get kind of interesting, because of course, as we'll come to, I'm sure, in a bit, there's lots of vested interests in positions and outcomes of how this might be seen. But maybe just before we come into this a bit more, you also talk about four different types of EMF, like different kind of categories. That might be just a helpful way of people organizing their thinking a little bit more about this.
Sure. The number one type of EMF that a lot of people will be familiar with is what we call the radio frequency, or also called the microwave radiation range. And that's your cell phone tower, cell phones, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and this is the biggest increase that we've seen in the last 10 years is probably in this range. And just to give you a little bit of perspective, and these are mind-boggling numbers, but the increase in this type of EMF between now and 100 years ago is a quintillion fold. So a quintillion is 1 in 15 zeros. Well, that's a billion billions.
So that sounds like the kind of number one of my kids would come up with when they were trying
well,
to make
exactly. It doesn't like even exist, right? It's tremendous. So and then it doesn't say anything about whether it's dangerous or not. But one thing is for sure, these frequencies, our bodies were never experiencing them. And even 100 years ago, we were barely experiencing them because there are microwaves that are coming from space, but it's a tiny fraction of the microwaves we expose ourselves to. So that's the first type. The second type is normal household electricity produces electrical fields. So that's, I used to think that electricity stays in the wall. Well, in fact, it emits a field, a low-level electricity field that can be measured on the body, but not felt. It's under your perception level, but it might have an impact also. So it doesn't mean household electricity is dangerous, but it may mean that if you reduce electricity, so for example, by, going camping in nature, you don't have any electricity around, you might get better sleep. So also these are important things to look at when we talk about fatigue and sleep and recuperation. The number three type of of field is a magnetic field. And that's a field that stays around big motors or a source of electricity. So for example, it might be problematic if you sleep and right next to your headboard on the other side of the wall, you're not aware that your neighbor has, let's say, a household appliance such as a fridge there. Well, your head might be in a huge magnetic field. And a lot of people realize that it impacts their sleep negatively. So these are the kind of things you could find in an EMF survey in your home, which again, the goal of would be to reduce these fields to the minimum possible, closer to nature, to have, a normal, natural sleep, right? So, and the fourth type is called dirty electricity, and these are referring to fluctuations in electricity caused by modern appliances. It's a little bit technical, but for the sake of this conversation, just understand EMFs and that these different types of field that have been classified by a profession called the building biology profession, professionals that do surveys in homes, it's important to say that these four types of fields, we never experienced them in nature, and that they can have an impact on your energy levels and sleep quality, and that there are things you can do to lower them to the minimum possible.
Yes. And before we come to some of the things we can do about this, I think it's worth exploring a bit more some of the kind of research and some of the work that's been done around this. Because I think if one was to believe what's put out in the kind of the perhaps the evidence which gets the traction, it's that this has all been proven safe. There's nothing to worry about. It's all kind of pseudoscience kind of stuff. So maybe say a bit about some of the research and some of the evidence that perhaps might be to the contrary of that.
Sure. So it's a very controversial topic, but so were X-rays or smoking at one point. So at one point, X-rays were used to irradiate children's feet in shoe stores simply to see if a shoe was the right fit. It is a fact. It was, I think, up until the 50s, and then the practice was banned because the scientific community agreed, oh my God, X-rays are actually, they damage your DNA and they do something. Now, at the moment, the meme and the scientific consensus, and I put it in quotes here if you're just hearing the audio, because there's really no such thing as a consensus. It's always evolving. Science is evolving. There are controversies at the moment. These EMFs, are they really a problem where our safety standards are insufficient, or are they not? So that's really the unclear question. And then there are scientific opinions on the matter. So if you ask a lot of very credible scientists in the US that are completely independent, they would tell you, and one of them is Dr. Anthony Miller, one of the world's most prestigious epidemiologists. He recently said EMFs should be a class one carcinogen, and that's next to smoking and asbestos. He's not the only one saying that. A lot of scientists are saying that. Other scientists would say that's nonsense. EMFs are perfectly safe. We have safety standards and there's nothing happening. So the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, or one of these two groups is completely out of their mind, right? And it's bizarre to me, but this is how science works. In reality, in the same time, you have scientific, very high-level scientists that think completely opposite ideas. And then our goal as consumers and, the government and agencies is to set standards and to try to decipher what's true from what's not. Now, as a journalist, I want to look at this evidence, how strong it is, and how it's interpreted by governments and by countries. And some say, well, that's not a scientific argument. Well, it is for me as a consumer who wants to protect myself. So the US, for example, and Canada have very, very high limits. So what they say is, well, our limits are super high and what you're exposed to is super low. So everything is fine. Other countries take a different approach. For example, France or even China, even Russia, multiple other countries that let's say, have also scientists that review the science that's available at the moment, they say, well, we don't feel comfortable with that because it seems that the evidence is pointing towards that people get effects, whether it's a high long-term cancer risk or loss of fertility, for example, in men when they have a cell phone in the pocket or even from exposure, overall exposure. The Germans are looking, a lot of German research around living near cell phone towers and how certain people have more risk for cancer or other aspects of their health that are diminished. So worldwide, there are different opinions. And if you look at other countries, they are taking a way more cautious approach to the question. And this is why, for example, France has decided to ban all cell phones last September in 2018 from schools. It was, sure, a distraction, but it's also because of the possible effects of radiation on kids. So that's one thing. They banned Wi-Fi from kindergartens and nurseries. Israel has done the same. And their standards are multiple folds under our safety standards here in Canada, or even where you are, where you might be in the U.S. or Australia and other countries that are interpreting the science differently. When you look at the bias in EMF science, it looks like it's strong, and I think it's a safe statement to say it's the same thing that we've seen with big tobacco. We're seeing where there is vested interest, and there is a lot of research that is financed by the industry. And when we look at independent databases, over and over, most studies show an effect, and most studies that don't show an effect have been financed by the industry, by the military, or by people who somehow have a vested interest. So that's one thing. And it's not, some people will be listening to this, well, okay, this is a conspiracy theory. No, this is business. There is a lot of money to be made in wireless, in tech technology, and if I was selling cell phones, I would not want to finance a study that says these things are not healthy. So it's just business. And at the moment, what is coming out, just since I wrote my book in the last 2 years, is just more and more and more studies reinforcing the ideas that we should reduce our EMF exposure and not increase it.
One of the examples you gave in the book, which I thought was really interesting, you were talking about how do they do the research to see if, for example, mobile phones are having an impact on people. And you were describing one of the studies that had been done where they had a kind of a character they call Sam, which I think is specific,
yes,
anthropomorphic mannequin, and that the head size, we'll say maybe talk about that, but some, sure, of the details of that, it was like, I thought it was quite impactful.
It's a little bit absurd. So SAM, standard anthropomorphic mannequin, is basically a big mannequin head that they use to test cell phones with. There are multiple problems with this type of testing. Well, first, it's not the size of the average, the head is not the size of an average head. I'm 5'4". Maybe it doesn't show, but I'm a small guy. So this head is the size of a 6'2", 220-pound military personnel person. So this is how, when they launched the sender, I think it might have been 1989. It is very, very old and deprecated, this way of testing. And they blast the head with radiation, and they look at temperature increase in the brain. So it is not allowed to go over 1 Celsius in temperature increase, because then you get problems. You might get a fever-like effect or even tissue damage to some extent. So these are the safety standards that have been updated last time in 1996, based on science that was from the late 80s. So needless to say, our situation has changed now, and these standards are completely deprecated, and we don't even have safety testing that's reflective of children using cell phones. So I'm 5'4", but my son Elliot is, I don't know, 2 feet or something, and he might use a cell phone if I allowed him to, just to play or just to talk on a cell phone with granddaddy and grandmommy. Well, it is a reality nowadays that people of all ages use cell phones. So we need to test these things as they are used. And even worse than that, they are used at a distance in the safety testing of 5 to 15 millimeters. I don't know exactly why they came up with it. Is it to imitate the ear? But what happened is that the French government in 2016 and 2017 looked at, okay, what happens when you remove this distance? Well, the radiation increases tremendously. And there's a scandal right now going on in France and internationally that we barely hear about called the Phone Gate. And it has been launched by a French physician, Marc Arazi. And I talked to Marc because you can tell my French is my first language. And it is what they found is that 90% of all cell phones fail the safety testing. The 1996 safety testing. So the phones and different gadgets don't even follow the rules because the rules have been so lax. So it is about time that we look at a society, not to eliminate technology, but revise these safety standards that are completely deprecated now.
So maybe this is a good point to broaden this a little bit to the link between EMFs and fatigue. So for people which are experiencing fatigue in many of the different iterations that they might experience, what are some of the ways that potentially EMF radiation could be having an impact on that?
Sure. The mechanisms are not that different from X-rays, in fact. So what happens on a cellular level is a loss of cellular energy. And for some people, I'm sure in this conference, you'll talk about mitochondria, which are the little power plants of the cell. Overall, it's a loss of mitochondrial function. And the best researcher looking at this, or two of the best researchers that I can name, is Dr. Martin Paul, P-A-L-L, from the Washington State University, who has shown that in your cells, you have calcium channels. And when you have foreign electricity, it activates a voltage sensor. So imagine there's a, you have a garage door outside or in your garage, and the sensor acts with, when electricity is on, it opens. Well, it's the same thing on these calcium channels. So electricity is in the air, which is Wi-Fi signal, for example, and it opens mistakenly. Normally in nature, it would have opened for a couple of milliseconds, and now it stays open for up to hours. And what happens is that these calcium channels let a lot of calcium flow into the cell. And that's an unnatural thing to have so much calcium inside the cell. Normally, you would have a lot outside the cell, between cells, and then just a little bit, just enough inside the cell. Now you have calcium overflow, and this creates oxidative damage. And down the road, it will lead to that cell. Let's say that cell is fatigued in reality because all the parts of the cell, including mitochondria, will work less efficiently. And this has also been shown on a mitochondrial standpoint that when you expose mitochondria to these fields, you also have a loss of efficiency of how efficient can they create energy. And that's the Dr. Paul Héroux from University of McGill here in Montreal. Proud fellow French Canadian, and he has shown that without the shadow of doubt that this is happening at very, very low levels of EMF. So we don't know to what extent. We don't know what are safe levels of EMFs. But what is clear right now is that we should all try to reduce our exposure best we can. Just like you're reducing your exposure to pesticides if you eat organic, you're reducing your exposure to smog if you decide to clean up your air. Or I was in Asia a few weeks back, I had a mask because the air was so polluted. So we do our best to avoid what makes us fatigued in the first place. So I think that this conversation, it's not about being overwhelmed and thinking, oh my God, there's radiation everywhere. There is radiation everywhere, folks. I'm in Montreal. There is cell phone towers. So if I focus on that, I'm a little bit lost. But if I focus, okay, what can I do to minimize my exposure? That's the key, because just like you cannot eliminate pesticides, maybe if you eat just from your garden, but then you have the rain, right? The raindrop. Yeah. So you cannot eliminate everything that might make you more fatigued or every bit of toxicity. In our modern world, it's impossible. A practical approach is, how can I minimize it while not spending too much time and money, right?
Absolutely. I'd love to come to that a bit more in a bit. Just while we're on the relationship with fatigue, actually, something that popped into my mind is I was talking with one of the other interviews as part of the conference with Dr. Raphael Kelman, who's an expert in microbiome function. And he was saying with the microbiome that it's starting to be discovered that gut bacteria communicate using low-level EMFs. And so also EMF radiation could actually be having an impact on the microbiome. I know that's something that you've come across.
There's not a lot of research published on that. And I'm more concerned by the fact that there's not a lot of research, right? It's right. When it comes to EMFs, it's what we don't know is the most concerning thing, because we need more studies. Sure. But at the same time, the industry and a lot of people will say, well, Nick, we need more studies. So let's wait until these studies come out. Well, my question for them is, okay, who's financing these studies? And in reality, and something that will shock a lot of people that are US-based, at the moment, I'm not aware of a single study that is being done in the US about EMF radiation. Not even about these new technologies called the 5G network that are being rolled out. So people are waiting on more studies. And at the same time, there's no studies that are done in the country or even in North America that I'm aware of. There was a major study, the NTP study, that came out several months back that said, EMFs are a clear carcinogen in rats. And you know what happened? Well, the FDA, who mandated the National Toxicology Program to create this study, it was back in the 90s, and it came out in 2018. The FDA said, well, we don't know exactly how these cancers in rats could be correlated to the human population. So they took the study and they said, it's probably irrelevant. Even if we spent 20 years studying the question and $25 million of taxpayers' money. So now we're just left with, okay, let's wait for more studies. who has the money? And it's not going to be the industry that wants to find effects. Obviously, no one in their sane mind would do that if they own a cell phone company. So we don't know about the microbiome, long story short, and we don't know exactly how it's impacting. There are some studies that show that certain pathogens grow faster under the influence of Wi-Fi, for example. Very concerning research from a research group from the researcher Tahiri, T-A-H-E-R-I, if I'm not mistaken, that's 2016. But it's so early that we cannot conclude that, Wi-Fi equals bad bugs or any of these things. It's just concerning early findings with so little financing to verify what the heck are we doing to ourselves.
It's a fascinating one, dismissing research on rats when research on rats is normally the starting point for developing pharmaceuticals and everything else.
Exactly. Without going on details, you're exactly right. And that's something a lot of people, if you hear these arguments, which says, rats are not humans, it looks like a sane thing to do. It looks like, you've just debunked the study, right? Well, no, we don't study people for cancer. Well, we do study people that have died of cancer. That's called epidemiology. That's one side of science. The other one is toxicology studies on rats. Why do we study rats? Because we can extrapolate what rats are seeing in a short time span, because their life expectancy is so low in the human population. And everything that has been proven to be a carcinogen in rats so far in research has been proven to be a carcinogen in humans later. So it is the golden standard. And the NTP study was supposed to be the definitive answer. But of course, with the politics involved, it looks like we still have to do more studies. So that's really the state of the science, you know.
Yes.
Bizarre.
Before we come into how we can start to reduce EMF exposure, sure. Maybe just what are the worst sources of EMFs? Like if you were to kind of look at the things which are the biggest, what appear to be based upon the data we have at the moment, the things sure. that we should be more concerned about.
The worst sources are the ones that are very close to your body. So if we talk about a cell phone, it would be the cell phone that you put to your ear, or even the cell phone that you would keep near your body if you're carrying it, because it's still, or if you carry it, you talk on headphones or speakerphone, it's still on, right? So unless it's on airplane mode, if you have a phone or even a tablet that you put right next to your body, or a laptop that you put on your lap, these would be the strongest sources, because radiation drops off with the square root of the distance. So in other words, if you put your cell phone at just 1 foot, you drop the radiation by 80%, and 2 feet is 90%. So it's tremendous what distance can do. And a lot of people, I don't know if that's Deborah Davis who said that in the book, I don't want to steal everyone's quote, but distance is your friend. So these people that have been looking into EMS for way longer than I did, have really come up with this phrase. And I think that it's key. So whenever you have a source of EMS, the second one I can talk about is a Wi-Fi router, right? Something I heard from multiple people is, well, my Wi-Fi router is right next to my computer, or my Wi-Fi router happens to be under the bed. That's one thing I saw in a hotel room, of all places, in a high-end hotel room. They put the Wi-Fi router under the bed. And why did they do that? It was probably just a practical thing to do. They didn't think twice, but it's a source. It's something that can be very disruptive for people's sleep. So creating distance from this Wi-Fi router, if you have it at home, it's putting as much distance as you can manage from living areas and especially your bedroom at night, and that Wi-Fi router. And then we'll go into solutions, but it's also, well, eliminating these sources if you can help it. So the personal devices, and then I would say second thing would be the Wi-Fi router. When it comes to exposures at home and also at work and other places, if you happen to be at work and the Wi-Fi router is at your desk, you can ask it ask your boss to move it or something like that. So distance is really key for those sources.
Okay, so let's come to some of the ways that people can reduce exposure. Like what are some of the relatively simple things that people can do without having to invest lots of kind of time and money in doing so?
Yes, it's really better habits. You know, you have different habits now. If you're listening to this, I'm sure you have invested towards your health. You have probably changed your habits. I remember back in the days, I used to be eating what can be considered a standard American diet, really the sad diet. Well, I, even as a health journalist at first, that's what I knew, right? When you know better, you do better. So it is the same thing when it comes to cell phones. It's a matter of habits and the way you use it. So that's my cell phone. It's on airplane mode. People now are contacting me and they know I have different times that I'm at the computer. My computer is wired in with an Ethernet cable. I don't use Wi-Fi. So that's one thing. Eliminating sources by opting to not talk on the cell phone so much, or reducing your time of exposure, is one thing. If you need to be on the cell phone all the time, well, creating distance in that case is very important. So you can use types of earbuds that are called the air tube headsets that really reduce the radiation that would go through the wire to your head. That's a little bit technical, but it's a good pair of headsets or earbuds to invest into. So creating distance, whether you're using any device, creating distance between the device and your body is the right thing to do. And this includes, it's not practical because a lot of people like to use the laptop on their laps, but using it in front of you on a desk, just like computers are intended to be, well, it creates this distance. When it comes to your computer, having this Ethernet cable and taking the cable, plugging in your computer the old way, right? It's boring, but I mean, it's, if you do that, most people report feeling less fatigued at the end of their workday. And that's something I've seen in people who have workstation, whether it's a home office or even a workstation at their job, most people are still working on Wi-Fi. Well, my question for you is, okay, well, do you plan to move around your computer? If not, you don't need Wi-Fi. You might as well, maybe it's going to require the job of an electrician, but you can wire in the Ethernet cable and then you reduce tremendously your exposure during the day. Because if that computer in front of me was on Wi-Fi, I'd be exposed. And that would be the equivalent of talking several hours on a cell phone a day without being able to compare the two sources. But it is a tremendous exposure that I'm removing from my life because of the proximity to this device. When it comes to Wi-Fi, the key, or any device, the key is to just turn it on when you need to use it. So if it's in the middle of the night, why do you need to have it on? People don't think twice. They keep it 24/7. It's just, it's like keeping your toaster plugged in. Why would you unplug it, right? It's, they don't think twice. Well, you can put it on a Christmas light timer. You purchase it off of Amazon for a couple of dollars or just a hardware store, and you plug in your Wi-Fi router and setting maybe 10 p.m. until 6 a.m. is going to turn off. And automatically you reduce these EMFs throughout the home. And most people that I told that to, even those who are skeptics that told me, Nick, okay, you're full of it, I don't believe anything about EMFs, they told me, wow, I sleep better. So if you do that with your cell phone, with your different devices inside the bedroom, and then turn off the Wi-Fi and make sure that everything is turned off, one thing you might experience is, well, more energy. And that's a fatigue super conference. So it's very important that you test these ideas for yourself. And one thing I might add, if you don't feel the effects, if you say, okay, Nick, well, I did it for 3 nights, I feel the exact same. Well, it doesn't mean it's not affecting you. It's like saying, well, I've reduced the pesticides in my diet and I don't feel better, so instead, I'm going to continue eating pesticides. Well, I don't follow that line of thought, really. It's minimizing all sources, whether you feel a direct effect or not. But generally speaking, people feel better doing that.
And I guess that all sounds, you know, very practical and doable. And I think it's also, I guess it's things like, often when I'm on my mobile phone these days, I'll just use it on speakerphone and just kind of hold it at a distance.
Yes.
Which seems to work, you know, totally just as well, in a sense.
For sure.
So it seems to be that there's, as you were saying a little bit, kind of at the start of this section, it's, there's relatively simple things that people can do. And I guess part of what it also comes down to is, given that there's this kind of grayish, is it gray area? It sounds like there's some fairly compelling evidence that there are some, at least for some people which are more sensitive, if not for everyone, there are some impacts here. And one of the ways that often we would look at the fatigue population, it's a little bit like the canaries in the coal mine. So you would go in back in the day, they'd go down to the coal mine and have a canary in a cage. And when the canary dropped over, it was like, okay, we know that there's an issue here. So often people with fatigue can have sensitivities to chemicals that the rest of the population might not, or to certain foods, for example, that it makes sense if a system is more sensitive, that it may be more sensitive to some of these factors. And I guess the danger is, if someone gets into the mindset of thinking, I have to have, like you said earlier, which I think was a really valuable point, that I need to have no EMFs in my life. It's like saying all the air I have to breathe has to be perfectly pure. All the food I want to eat is going to be perfect. Well, you're a bit screwed on that, because the soil itself is not what it was 50 years ago. But it's trying to have a measured perspective in terms of what's possible.
Sure. When it comes to people who are listening to this and say, well, I already know that I'm sensitive, because that's people who have chronic fatigue, autoimmune disorders, or are even nearly bedridden, oftentimes they know. They won't even touch a cell phone. So if you know you're sensitive, or if you do the 3 nights test, you turn off your Wi-Fi, turn off your devices, and you feel tremendously better, well, it's probably time that you take this interview and just go deeper with your EMF removal, because people and the second part of my work, that's what happened. 2017, I wrote my book. 2018 and this year, I created a course for health professionals in collaboration with doctors, because I realized that the top doctors that are treating chronic fatigue and autoimmune disorders and Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and trying to manage these conditions, if not reverse them in some regards, like Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt from the Sophia Health Institute.
He's one of our guests on the conference. Yeah.
That's he will talk about EMS, I'm sure. Yeah, so Dr. Klinghardt, he's a collaborator on the course we've created. And he told me, Nick, what every other practitioner is missing, because the average patient that he sees has seen more than 20 other practitioners before him. So these are people that are not getting better even with the best functional medicine, because they are hypersensitive to everything. So it makes it a very complicated portrait of chronic illness, right? And if you fall in this category, you say, oh my God, that's me. I've been to 40 doctors. Well, listen to this, because he said, Nick, the number one factor that everyone else is missing is not diet. It's not another supplement. It is removal of these EMFs. So what he's realized through trial and error is that if you cannot heal, sometimes it's because your body is in this high EMF environment, and that maybe it's keeping you, keeping your nervous system activated. Maybe it's preventing you from sleeping soundly, so you can have tissue repair and repair your brain and lower inflammation. But whatever the reason is, it just looks like it's keeping the stress bucket so full that they need to either change environment, which is a huge decision for people kind of getting away from the city and living in nature for a while until they can recover. Some people go to mountain retreats and all these things, but there are costs associated with it. And some other people choose, okay, I'm going to hire what's called a building biologist or another type of EMF consultant. It's called the GeoVital certification. And you can Google it, you'll find practitioners that are in your state or country usually. And these professionals can survey your home and find the sources and even help you come up with shielding solutions. So what can happen in some situations is, yes, you turn off your own Wi-Fi, you don't use your cell phone, but you've become so sensitive to literally everything that you need to address EMFs to a point that if right there next to the window there's a cell phone tower, well, you cannot really turn it off. So in that case, you could have shielding solutions and sleep under a bed canopy or these advanced solutions that look a little bit crazy. But Dr. Klinghardt and other doctors that are at the top of their field have found tremendous value in doing that. And on a personal standpoint, I don't need more evidence, because it's only logical to me that we will sleep better in an environment that has clean air and clean EMFs. That's closer to nature. It's just our bodies, the way they work, without being able to quantify it, it's only logical that people sleep better in an environment that's closer to nature. To some extent, I don't want a lion eating me during the night, right? You understand what I'm saying? But it's only going back to ancestral levels of radiation and having this just calmness to it. And what people realize is that they sleep better, and if they sleep better, they recuperate better. So this is really how it fits in treating the advanced fatigue that some people listening to this might be experiencing.
Fantastic. And I'm mindful we're running out of time, but just before we come to how people can find out more about your book and your work, maybe just touch on briefly, how do EMFs affect children differently to adults? Because obviously their bodies and their brains are much less developed. So I'd be curious as to your thoughts on that.
Yes, there are multiple people that are extremely concerned about the effects that EMFs might have on children. And one of these concerns is, well, our safety standards are on adults. So how does it affect children differently? And pound per pound, children will absorb twice the radiation compared to adults. And in their spinal cord, it's up to 10 times when engineers looked at how the body is behaving. And that's because they have a higher water content. And these microwave radiation signals tend to be absorbed by water. So it's very concerning. We don't know a lot, but one of these scientists that is very high level is Dr. Hugh Taylor from the Yale University. And he's at the top of his field from one of the top universities in the US. So that's not someone who believes in crazy conspiracy theories. He says, well, when I look at the available data, there's a cause and effect between EMFs and behavior change, like ADHD, overexcitation, and behavioral problems. And at the same time, we do have this epidemic of ADHD and different behavioral problem in our children. So in his mind, it's part of the reason that we're seeing children these days acting up so much and having all these issues. We don't know, again, what's the percentage? One of the factors? Is it the cause? I cannot tell. But one thing is sure, if it's affecting adults. And if you believe anything we've said in this conversation and test it out for yourself and impact your sleep, imagine how much is impacting the sleep of your kids. So in that case, the same thing applies to your kids and even more. And it means that if you're handing an iPad to a kid, make sure to pre-download the content on there and not keep it connected while the children are on devices. And that's very, very important because they are simply not tested on children, not intended as a toy. And our safety standards, I think in the future, will change. And I really doubt that we will keep handing these hot potatoes of that are called cell phones or iPads to children. So it's really, in the meantime, it's up to you to change these habits and just help also your kids minimize screen time overall. That's another topic, That's something I really advocate. But it is very prudent to not give a device that's connected to children and making sure to pre-download the games, pre-download the movies, whatever you want to give them. I'm okay with it, but make sure that it's on airplane mode in that case.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. My wife is militant about the kids having the iPads on airplane mode. Nicholas, this has been fascinating. We've mentioned your book, The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs, which people can get from Amazon, and I'm sure amongst other places. You can say a bit more about where people can find out more, mention your website. You mentioned your course. Yeah, just tell us about that.
Sure. So the Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs, it's on Kindle and hard copy, Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, UK, Germany, Japan, everywhere, worldwide. You can find it. Just type EMFs in Google and or in Amazon and you'll find it. My website is being developed, but it will be at theemfguy.com, where you can find my YouTube channel and everything that I'm publishing and new information and new video tutorials about EMFs also that I'm doing on YouTube. And finally, my course, which is a little bit more advanced, but it is both for individuals who feel concerned and also for health professionals, because it's a little bit more in depth, but it's open to everyone. We didn't want to restrict it to just health professionals. And it can be found at electrosmogrx.com.
Fantastic. Nicholas, thank you so much for your time. This has been a really insightful conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.